Welcome to this talk from the Canando Zen Meditation Center. Located in Mountain View, California, Canando's meditation practice is open to the public. For more information or to get in touch with us, you can visit our website at canando.org. That's K-A-N-N-O-N-D-O.org.
Good evening, everyone.
Good evening.
Tonight, our speaker will be our abbot, Les Kay. So I think everyone here knows Les. Les has been practicing for over 50 years. How many years has it been now, Les?
I can't do the math.
Okay, a long time.
Yeah.
Longer than the rest of us. So it's great to see you, Les, and we're looking forward to your talk.
Okay, thank you. Good evening.
Good evening.
Good evening. After you've practiced for a little bit and you stop to reflect on the practice, if you stop to take a careful look at the practice, you'll discover or you'll notice that our practice is based on a very radical view of the world and of the individual's place in the world. And this radical view says that the individual is not the most important thing. Something else, something other, some undefined something other is more important. And this is quite radical according to the modern view of the world that people have these days. So our practice is about holding an attitude of reverence and an attitude of humility where a concern for ourself is not the main focus. To some people, that's kind of radical. The concern of our practice is not so narrow. Our concern is very wide, and it is very inclusive, and it is for all of life. And this is a very ancient spiritual feeling. So we can say that our practice is based on understanding or having an attitude of something that I'll just call unrecognized virtue or unacknowledged merit. Or in other words, our practice is about doing things or doing something without caring if anybody notices. Or in other words, the attitude of our practice is to do things, to do something without hoping to be recognized or without seeking for some kind of recognition. And according to our practice, this attitude is the basis of our life's fundamental activity and the basis of spiritual practice. So the foundation of truly knowing how to work and how to do things means to be fully satisfied with doing inconspicuous work, or what the world would call inconspicuous. So part of our attitude means not to worry if the work that we do, if the activities of our life are noticed or not. The attitude of our practice is we don't give that much attention. It means that when our daily attitude our daily activities when our daily activity is based on practice, our activities are done with a very wide worldview. In other words, beyond the immediate, beyond the immediate moment. And this means to have a very long range vision of what it is we do with our life. So the value of this attitude is neither temporary nor permanent, and it is not short term or long term. Actually, you can't describe it. And there's no need to describe it. This attitude is beyond description and beyond distinctions. For most of us, I think that the work that we do in today's world will be forgotten, won't be remembered, and usually pretty soon. And usually while we are still alive, people won't remember what we've done. In fact, you quite often hear the term, what is it that she does? So if it means that the work we do is will be forgotten, if we really care about what it is we do, we have to make our effort for future generations. And we must find satisfaction in doing work that is quiet, that other people may not assign much value. If we can do that, if we are satisfied with this kind of quiet work, we will have a life of composure. But if we have a short-sighted view of what it is we do, which is based on gaining attention or gaining fame, then we will lose our composure and our life will lose its value. So working without ego is how we hold our life together, how we make it complete and how we give it meaning. If you've spent time at Tassajara, you know that they wash dishes and scrub the floor with this view. In the culture that we have, you know, if we are smart and if we are capable, we can do anything we like. And people and all of society will ask us to do things for them. And they will offer us very nice rewards for doing them. Sometimes these rewards are material. And sometimes these rewards are given out in terms of approval and recognition. But if we do things in our life based only on pleasing others or only on what they want, and if we base our activities on being rewarded, we are allowing ourselves to be used by others. And in a way, we become their puppet, and we are not being true to ourselves. So to be helpful in the world in its true sense, we have to be careful of continuing an attitude that where we devote ourselves to taking care of inconspicuous things. Then we will have confidence in ourselves in a very large way. if we want to understand the meaning of life in a spiritual way, we may turn to studying various religions. And remember the best points in them, the teachings that inspire us. And we can be guided by what we read about these various practices. But at the same time, we have to be careful about being greedy, about trying to gain truth from outside, from somebody else's belief system. You know, if in your practice or in your daily life, you have a faint or a subtle glimpse of the truth, that's enough. When it is your glimpse, and when you have it, you should devote yourself to it. This is how we can find out, this is how we can discover the true meaning of our life. And this is the vision of our practice. This is the vision of Mahayana Buddhism. In the Lotus Sutra, Buddha says to light up one corner. And everybody is familiar with this expression. To light up one corner and not to worry about lighting up the whole world, but just to make it bright where you are. And in Suzuki Roshi's book, To Shine One Corner of the World, he says, if you share one corner, then people around you will feel better. You will always feel as if you are carrying an umbrella to protect them from the heat or rain. So there is no need to be famous or to be widely admired or widely respected. And there's even no need to be of great use in a social sense. Most important thing for us is to be ourselves. But if we fall into the trap of always striving to be admired or powerful or in control, we will lose the meaning. We will lose the meaning of our existence. So if we become proud of our practice, if we become proud of ourselves, or proud of our reputation, or what we have attained in the daily world, that means we are relying on something outside of ourselves to show us meaning. But we cannot find the meaning of our life with that kind of orientation. It's because we rely on others recognition or to be rewarded. When we rely on others, we become very proud of ourselves. But when we are truly independent, we do not rely on anything outside of ourselves. And we will not carry with us the burden of pride. So when we don't understand the meaning of making an effort just for its own sake, obtaining approval from someone else doesn't mean very much. So our practice often talks about finding our independence and our confidence. And when we have our independence and our confidence, it means we are not deluding ourselves, but to see ourselves exactly as we are. And this is not difficult if we are sincere with ourselves. If we are aware of our practice and aware when it gets away from us, and when we realize we have to pick it back up and come back to ourselves. Our practice cannot be perfect, but when we are aware of our imperfection, then our practice is really working. So people may not notice or acknowledge what we do from day to day, and they may not say thank you, but it doesn't matter, does it? On the other hand, we should always say thank you when somebody does something helpful. So even if you do accomplish great things in this world that are of great benefit to people, and people express their gratitude, don't forget to shine your light in the smallest corner where you are. Does anyone have any questions?
I see Janet. That was a lovely talk. I miss you very much. Thank you.
When are you coming back?
I don't know.
Oh. How many times have you heard that question?
Yeah, I know. When are the restaurants opening?
Oh.
Then I'll come back. No, I have to stop in a motel on the way back.
Oh.
And I want to make sure that's possible. I mean, it's all weird, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's all weird.
Okay.
Yeah. Ah, you made me cry. Oh. Les?
Yes.
Would you mind giving us an update on your health?
Yes, I'd be happy to do that. I'm cured.
Okay.
I'm good. Cured. But I'm just taking some follow-on treatments to for maintenance to ensure that everything is all clean. But fundamentally, I'm cured.
My
life is normal.
Wonderful news. Wonderful news.
That's wonderful. That's great.
I have a question.
Yes, Doug.
Hi, Les. So if I recall from understanding your sort of professional and then Buddhist career, I think you were working full-time at IBM until you retired and started becoming our abbot full-time, and have been doing that for, you can't even count how many years now. So I'm interested in hearing about the conversation you had with yourself and maybe Mary and other folks on where you knew that the most impact you could have in terms of shining your light wasn't, you know, with IBM or the Silicon Valley company and all those things. There's a lot of tools there, but rather working with Canon Doe. And why you think that that was the best decision for you and how you sort of thought through that.
Well, I after I got into the practice, I continued to work full time for several years. I did not work full time for Conan Doe. It was part time. You know, I shared my time between Conan Doe and the family and work. But I never went through a thought process like you described. You know, what's the trade-off and what's the best way best place to put my energy? And I never did that. I think my mind was saying, I don't know what I'm doing. I'm getting involved in something new that feels very, very right. How do I get involved with it in a meaningful way without dropping out or sacrificing my other responsibilities? So I just let it evolve. I never made the, until when I finally did retire from work, then I knew that I could devote most of my time, to the practice to Conan Doe. But for a number of years, I just let it percolate and did what I did based on feelings rather than some rational decision. Is that the back of your head I see behind you in that black thing? Oh, yeah. So now it's the back of your head. Okay. So I see the front of your head and the back of your head. Great.
Jayashree?
You Les. Oops, I guess I'm muted. Thank you. Thank you, Les. That was so helpful. Always need that reminder to do things without ego. What I found was so helpful, you know, how you said that when you do something, don't expect the thank you. And I think I try to do that, not to wait for that verbal thank you, but I find that it's so difficult because even though you tell yourself, okay, you're doing this, you don't need for the person to thank you, you still kind of look for some other subtler cues, like maybe a glance, you know, maybe they'll acknowledge. And it's so, your mind plays such, you know, you tell yourself, I don't need that thank you, but your mind still plays those games with you that you look up and say, well, did he like what I did, or did she like what I did? You know what I'm saying? It's very difficult to do, to get your mind to stop that. So I don't know if you have any, how do you get your mind not to do that?
I'll keep working on it. Yeah. Keep up your practice and little by little, you'll let go of it.
I have a quick comment related on that, because I can relate to Jayashree quite a lot, especially with work situations, like when I feel like doing the right thing, not only sometimes is a thankless job, but sometimes you get thrown under the bus for doing the right thing. You know, sometimes it's very thankless. And it's hard. I think sometimes I really wish it would turn out differently, but this was a good reminder for me because thinking about your talk tonight, Les, it's like being myself is its own reward. You know, like, so what if I'm not acknowledged for doing the right thing? I got to be myself, you know, and that feels really good. So thank you.
Well, I have a small story. The other day, I met with someone out in a garden. And when I came back in the house, I noticed that there was a caterpillar on my sleeve. You know, caterpillar found my sweater because we were in the garden. So I went outside holding my arm up, and I got to some leafy place, and I gently pushed a caterpillar onto a leaf. And, you know, that feels good. Nobody's around to say, good for you. It feels good to take care of things like that and to take care of other beings like that. And that's where our satisfaction comes from, and that's where we find meaning. And it often means being close to nature, but it takes place also when we're just close to each other. And that's the basis of our practice, taking care of the small thing that you suddenly notice you need to take care of.
Janet?
Giuseppe, how are you?
Oh. Hi, Giuseppe.
Tell us.
I need to unmute him. Hang on. There we go. Hi, Giuseppe.
Hello. Hello.
Hello, Giuseppe.
Bonnie, thank you for organizing everything. Les, thank you so much for the beautiful talk that speaks to me very directly. And Janet, hello, so nice to see you. I want to say that the subject of your talk is really close to me every day. And I want to share that my work situation is that I am the head of the company that I founded. So I'm the CEO of the company that I founded. And that's an interesting viewpoint, because you would think that gives you independence. You can express yourself also in the work life. But actually, the reality is that it's no different from any other job. And you are just the same way, the same pressures from that everybody else in the job that could lead you to behave like a puppet. So I think it's you know, the same. It changes the puppeteer maybe, but in every work life or setup, you always find the same situation, that if you are looking, if you don't have this internal independence based not on the results or being acknowledged by others, I think you're always a puppet. So it's I just wanted to comment on that, share that, my viewpoint on that. At the same time, also, I think it takes really our practice helps us very slowly to let go of this attachment we have to this rewards, a little bit like the sugar craving or other more immediate craving. Also the craving for this reward from others, which in the end then makes in other moments feel us miserable. Then sometimes people feel miserable and we feel miserable. I feel miserable because then I feel that things are not, I'm not recognized or things are not going the way I want. So it's really, very well thought out approach to life. The one that the Buddha is proposing us, I think. Where he gives us this hope of finding a stability, and still being engaged in what we do. So thank you for speaking to that so clearly. And also giving us the room here to take our time to get there.
Hi.
Thank you for your talk. What is the ego good for? Why do we have it?
We do have to make decisions in our life every day, every moment. We have to decide about which action to prefer over another one, or what we have to do to fix a problem or to gain something. We have to have a mind that thinks like that, that solves problems and to fulfill its need to be creative. So the ego is part of that, that is part of the ego. So the ego isn't all bad. It does provide progress and it does provide creativity, and it can provide us with some kind of self-confidence in our everyday life. It's just that I think Buddhism warns against going too far with ego, not to become proud of it. But because we're human beings, we need it. It's part of us. It is us. We can't deny it. So we should enjoy our ego, but treat it kindly, and don't, enjoy it like you might enjoy a very modest ice cream. It's good, but don't, not too many scoops. Thank you.
Columbine?
Okay, I think to Teresa's point about not necessarily the need for ego, but one thing that occurs to me about appreciation, especially when it comes to, say, your parents or, say, in work situations, I think that there is a fear instinct with work. If you're not, if you don't think that people understand that you're performing well, especially in the Silicon Valley, you can be fired or laid off. So it comes down to, I think that getting appreciated is something that we seek from our colleagues, but it also comes down to a kind of instinctual need to feel that we're safe. You know, we're going to get a paycheck and we're going to be able to pay for groceries and stuff like that. And with our parents, I think we seek approval because I think that's something that we're, even from the time that we're babies, we're just sort of taught that that is what we're supposed to do. Like, we do good things, they are happy. We do bad things, they are not happy. It's very ingrained in us, I think.
I think when we're very, very, very young, we need to be given rewards to teach us what are the right things to do, what are the constructive and kind things to do. As a child, we don't know how to make those judgments. So our parents reward us for doing things, for doing activities that they want to encourage. Much like you might train your dog. You're trying to teach your dog to sit, and when she does it, you give him a treat, and the dog learns how to sit. But as we grow older, we learn from our own experience what's the right thing to do. We no longer need treats from our parents to teach us. We learn from our own experience and from just paying attention what's the constructive and creative and the most helpful things to do. So actually, we need to train ourselves and not depend on somebody else to train us.
So I just want to ask, even after doing our practice and getting off our cushion and going out into the real world, our attitude should not be any different than it is on our cushion. Is that correct?
Yes, that's right.
Okay. Thank you. So there is no separation between, so there should be no separation between our practice and our real life.
Right. They're not two separate worlds.
Okay.
Vanessa?
Hi, Laz. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Hi.
You talked about finding or sort of recognizing truth within ourselves, smaller truths that come, and having confidence in those truths within ourselves. And it's something that that element of confidence is something that I often struggle with, because I have a fear of arrogance, and I often wonder, and I'm afraid of confidence spilling into arrogance, and where the border between the two might be.
Mm.
So I wonder about kind of guarding against that. How do we stop confidence from becoming arrogant?
I think true confidence comes from being able to acknowledge to ourselves that we are doing the right thing, that we are trying to do the right thing, that we are continually trying to do the right thing, trying to find the right way. When we can say that to ourselves, you know, if we can always say, you know, I'm making my best effort, and then we can find confidence in that. That's a bit different from the confidence that says, oh, I can do this, or I can make three-pointers, or I can slam dunk, or it's a different kind of confidence. It's not a confidence of accomplishment. It's a confidence of selflessness. You know, I think when as individuals, when we accept the notion of selflessness and we make our best effort to live it, there's confidence there. Making that effort to be selfless is where confidence comes from. But if we say, oh, look at me, I'm becoming selfless, then we start to lose it. So if you can feel that you're always making your best effort, you won't have any problem with arrogance. Oh, hi, Brenda.
Hi. I don't know what. One of the things that I think about with confidence and arrogance is, what's the response that you get from the other person? what's the answer, right? Like they, you know, are they, do they, are they, does it cause the other person to grow and kind of, do they look happier? Do they look more fulfilled? Do they shine? And when your attitude is one of arrogance, you see the other person kind of shrink down and like, ah! You know? They don't want to hear it, right? It seems to be a very, very, you know, people sense that, right? Like you can sense it in other people. It's very intrinsic in us.
Yeah, it's not even arrogance. It's mostly indifference. It's a subtle attitude, and sometimes a subtle attitude in people that tells them, oh, I don't have to say thank you. Oh, I don't have to acknowledge that. They don't need it. I'm not going to do it. That's sort of indifferent. It doesn't give recognition to the other person's trying to keep a good connection. So if you say, well, I don't need to thank her for that. Yeah, but then of course that could escalate into arrogance where they say, oh, the heck with her. But mostly it's indifference. And that can become very pervasive. So, you know, part of our practice is to avoid being indifferent, to show that we really care for each other and to acknowledge each other and not to turn away. But if somebody turns away, don't take it seriously. Don't take it personally. Maybe they have something on their mind.
I have a question. How do you not take it seriously?
How not to?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't think there's an instruction manual on how to or how not to. You have to discover it.
Vanessa?
You know, related to what Brenda is saying, Les, you always say that one of the most important things in our practice is relationship, right? Relationships we have with each other. But how do you keep relationships going if when you face indifference? So because relationship has to be both ways, right? So how much effort do you make?
Endless. Endless. Even if the other person becomes difficult in the situation, don't become indifferent to them. Just, we have to continue living according to our own understanding of how we should live.
Omar?
Can I ask one more question? Just wanted to ask if any of this has to do with empathy, having empathy for the other person, even though the other person is really difficult with us.
What about the empathy?
When we don't get along with certain people, we can have empathy for other people, correct?
Yeah. If we find ourselves in a difficult relationship, rather than separate or push away or get annoyed, we consider that the other person is having a hard time.
Okay.
And so they're either indifferent or arrogant, and it's not our fault. We don't take it personally. They're having a hard time. Okay. So we continue to acknowledge them and not be indifferent.
Thank you.
Giuseppe? Oh, you're on mute. Sorry, hang on.
Les, can you give us a little bit of a hint on how to practice this selfless effort, also in our practice? It's the thing that I find the most difficult, the more tricky. It's like they say, move and you're trapped. You know, if you try to put more effort in your practice, you might tend to do it with your ego, which is your more normal way of putting effort into things. And that is not helpful. So I find the most difficult for myself to learn, try to teach myself how to apply this selfless effort. For instance, in sitting, I try to sit every day at the same hour without even thinking about it, rather than focusing on increasing or changing my practice. But how expanding that ability to do a selfless effort is, I find it tricky every day. So what advice can you give on the art of making a more selfless effort?
When we first start to practice, that's the usual attitude. Oh, I must make an effort. Oh, I must sit more hours. All right. I must achieve something. But with experience, if you continue with your practice, your attitude changes to one that says, this is the right thing to do. Everybody should do this. I will do this because this is the right thing to do. This is the way I express myself. And then your practice becomes more relaxed and you simply follow the schedule. Whatever schedule you've set for yourself or whatever schedule you may be involved in with other people, just follow the schedule. That's all. Well, what's next? What do I do next? In my life, what do I do next? Like I said in the beginning, this is a radical view. It's not about, you know, gaining something or saying, how much more effort do I need to make to get where I want to be? It's just that we're already there. We're already where we need to be. We just need to express ourselves in the most natural, simplest way. So when you get up in the morning, you just go to the Zendo or your cushion. And when it's time to get up and go have breakfast, you just do that without thinking. Just go do it. That's all. And don't be concerned too much with making any progress about letting go. If you just follow the schedule, it means you've let go.
Janet, was that a question, or are you just saying hi or thank you?
About Giuseppe.
Oh, you were thankful for the question. Got it. Thank you. Any last questions or comments? Well, thank you for your talk, Les. It's really good to hear you again and hear your Dharma talk.
So. I'm glad to be here.
This talk was brought to you by the Canando Zen Meditation Center in Mountain View, California. For more information or to support this podcast, go to canando.org. That's K-A-N-N-O-N-D-O.org.